Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is the Serial Fanaticist, a podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Paige Lavoie to talk about The Power by Naomi Alderman. We go in deep on the book's themes of power, gender, and rape culture, and talk about our problems with the frame narrative and the ending, to a certain extent. A content warning, the book portrays sexual assault and rape, and we talk about it. If that would upset you, you might want to skip this episode. The Power is an exciting book and deserving of the hype surrounding it, and it was a great talk about it with Paige. On to the discussion! Hello, everyone. I'm joined once again by Paige Lavoie to talk about some books. Paige, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. We are talking about The Power by The Power by Naomi Alderman. Widely lauded best books of 2017 by many, like the New York Times. Mr. Former U.S. President Barack Obama called it one of his favorite books of 2017. Won multiple prizes. Trumpeted, I guess, by Margaret Atwood, author of The Handmaid's Tale. And Alderman herself is, I guess, mentored to a certain extent by Atwood. So, which you can clearly
see. Not surprising
at all. You can definitely see the DNA in those two books. The Power is about, it's like a what if book, really. It's what if women got the ability to electrocute people with their hands, with a little weird electric eel organ in their shoulder. Mm-hmm. What would happen? Turns out, world would go crazy, apparently.
The end of the world. Well,
yeah. What'd you think of it, Paige?
Oh my gosh. It's weird, because it was definitely like a well-written, good book. However, I don't know that I don't think it was meant to be enjoyable, but I definitely didn't. There were moments that I found enjoyable, but overall as a story, I was stressed out, which I mean is like the natural reaction, but probably, I don't know. How did you feel about it?
I agree. I think I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't want to say I didn't enjoy it. It mm-hmm. is. I'm also a person who probably regularly reads more intense, terrible things. Books where terrible things happen to people. So it doesn't bother me as much. I'm desensitized to a certain extent. I think it's very compelling. It's a word I like. It's a word I use to describe books. That are very specific. This book feels dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. That's a good thing. When I encounter books like that, it's few and far between. And I would not, the first word, I would not describe this book as enjoyable, because it is,
right. It
is, I think, well written and a really interesting premise. And it does a lot of interesting things with that premise, but it is about mostly bad people doing mostly bad things. And I don't know if I feel like this book is, I have problems with it. There are a few things I would pick out and mm-hmm. criticize. But it's very audacious. It is reaching for big things. And so for any book that does that, I generally can forgive a lot. I can forgive a lot of things that I go, oh, I don't like this, or I don't like that, I don't like this. But it is, you know, it is going after concepts of power and gender and
religion
and sex and rape culture and masculinity and feminism and It is going for the throat, all of that stuff. And I applaud it for that. And I don't know if I want to necessarily say this is like an important book, because that I don't like calling any book important. That feels a little too snooty for me. I don't think you need to call books books are inherently important, whatever they are. I don't want to say, oh, this book is important, you need to read it. And also, most people who this book, the people who probably should read this book will never read this book. So calling a book important doesn't mean much to me. This is not a book club book, meaning like a bunch of people, you know, get together and like drink and talk about this fun book they had. It is about dark, dark, heavy stuff.
A bunch of people drink and talk about, like dark, heavy stuff. It's a different kind of book club.
Yeah. I mean, my book clubs are not what, it requires a certain different kind of dedication, which is you're showing it, Paige, by reading.
I will say I'm thankful that, like, I think without you being like, oh, I'm interested in this book, why don't we do it for book club? Me being like, yeah, that does sound interesting. I wouldn't have picked up this book on my own. Like, it's just not a genre that I gravitate to. Like, when I'm reading, I like to like kind of escape, and I'm good with like some drama, but the topics that this book touched on are not something I'd really want to like curl up in bed and read. But it really got me to step out of my comfort zone, like so many of the other books that we've read so far have. And yeah, I think I found myself like, I would binge through chapters, and I would end up feeling that same kind of fatigue that you feel when you've read a lot of news articles with like heavy topics and politics, and you just kind of are like, I need puppies. I need puppies and ice cream. Like, I just, and to shout at people, like the anger. Like, I felt a lot of, especially the early chapters, where I was just angry as I was reading them.
I mean, it is displaying injustice, you know. It is demonstrating, and like the whole book, it does, I think it eases up at times because I think wisely it demonstrates the fluctuating nature of power and of the reactions to new institutions of power being, you know, rising up, like the power in this book, what, daughters, sisters of Eve, daughters of Eve, which I forget what they call each other.
I think because she was Mother Eve. Yeah. So I think they were the daughters of Eve.
Daughters of Eve. But, you know, I mean, it's not just them, it's women. It is literally all women that have, or at least all the young women who then give the power to older women. So any new institution of power, is going to be blowback. There is going to be war.
Definitely. Like, I did like that. That was like a little nugget in the book that I was like, oh, that's like cool social commentary, where it was the younger women can awaken it and the older women. Just because the younger generations tend to be like more progressive and more aware. And I don't know, I thought that was like a cool tidbit. I will say there were times when I was like, okay, I get it. This is social commentary. Like, in especially as like the later chapters kind of like certain things kept continuing to happen, I was like, I'm being vague.
You can spoil whatever you wanted. We're not.
Yeah, I guess I'm being vague because I don't want to get too in detail, because there's a trigger warning for anyone listening. There's a lot of sexual violence.
I'm gonna give that in the preamble. This book is about rape culture in I think as a reader as a consumer of art, as a modern consumer of art, as many people I think of our generation and younger are now, very sensitive to any kind of sexual violence in art, because for so long, it was used very flippantly. It was used as a way, here, this is a way we can make the audience feel a way. This is a way we can engage our main character. Like, it's usually, hey, there's a dude, he's our main character, his girlfriend is raped, so he has to go get revenge on whatever. And it's very flippant. It doesn't mean anything because it is not examining anything. It is not, the female character is not barely a character usually in those situations. And so it's like, oh, they're not, this is, why is this, this it's lazy, really. It's lazy.
It's a weird plot device most of the time, like a lot of times when you see it used.
And in this book, it is about that. Like, a lot of it is about, it is about rape culture, it is about gender and power, and how this new status quo would disrupt that power structure. And it's hard to read at times, like, but I don't think any of it is cheap. You know, I think if you're going to be writing about it, you have to have it. You have to have these demonstrations of sexual violence and about, like, oh, this is what it means in this case. And, like, I think they were talking about, it was one of the scenes in India where Tunde is reporting, it's kind of a tossed off line, but it's women wouldn't walk these streets alone for decades because it's too dangerous for them. They would get assaulted, and then suddenly, oh, they have the power, and now they're out in force, and men are running for their lives because they're afraid for the first time in a long time.
And I think we got a lot of that through this book, it kept bringing up in the different chapters, like the flip of now the men. There was that really, I don't want to call it strange, but be kind of like break in the chapters where it was like, and now archives of internet history and like printed comments and advertisements. And there was like the self-defense advertisements for men, which are very similar to products that I've looked at. And well, no, they weren't. Let me back up. Not similar in like their function, because obviously I'm not protecting myself from being electrocuted, but similar to products that I've looked at as like gifts, like, oh, this would be a nice Christmas present because I know that this friend likes to go for walks. So like some of it was just so, and it's meant to feel that like familiar kind of feeling of like, well, now they have this fear that women have had for so long. And, and yeah, I mean, it is very uncomfortable to read just in general, like, I sat there thinking, because this power is awakened in girls who are 14, 13, like young, like teenagers, and they have all of these feelings and, hormones, that's already such like a turbulent time in a teenager's life. Then introducing the like, hey, you could electrocute people if you want. Like, I was talking with Matt, my husband, last night. I'm like, yeah, I mean, thinking about this book, and if this were to happen in real life, I probably would have hurt people if I had this power, like probably on accident and probably intentionally as well, like as self-defense or whatever, you know. And so that it definitely put me in a weird headspace of like, if you had that power, like it would be weird to be the same person that you are right now. I don't know, it's weird. Tangent.
I think it's fairly important part of the book is that it is supposed to make this book asks you questions. It is supposed to make you think about where would you be in this situation? Like I think it does it on purpose by introducing a lot of kind of, I don't want to say unimportant, kind of cultural like new cultural institutions that come about with this, the advent of the power. It kind of just, it throws them off in like little mentions. They don't, they're not given a lot of time, but they are, and they're sprinkled throughout every single chapter, regardless of what the point of view character is. It mentions, you know, it mentions men who are obviously opposed to anything about the power. There are men who are on board with it. There are women on both sides. There are, you know, they talk a lot about sexual dynamics with it, because now, you know, a rape is a different thing now, because if a man tries to rape a woman, she'll murder him with electricity. And now she has that power, and now, and it goes into later on in the book, it goes on links about how women now can rape men using the power.
And that was so frustrating, because you just want people to be better. You want them to say, like, I'm going to use my power for good and not for, like, revenge, and not to take advantage of people who are technically weaker than them. Like, and it's to watching characters become the thing that they originally were fighting against was so frustrating. And I get that that's like a part of the message. Like, I think power corrupting mm-hmm. was definitely like a big part of this story. But, you know, and also another conversation I was having when I was just talking about this book was that this is not a story about like your nice, honest, average folks most of the time. Like, it's, this is, I don't know. I guess, you know, the mayor started off pretty average, now that I'm saying that out loud, and we watched the power grow stronger and corrupt, and mm-hmm. how she changed her daughter as well. Her daughter, I think I felt the worst about through the whole story.
Yeah. Her daughter I think her and her daughter, Margot and Jocelyn is her, mm-hmm. Joss. Those are, they are the, you know, they are middle America. You know, she is a mayor, and then suddenly she gets this power. And like, I think you're right. Most of these characters are not quote unquote normal, quote unquote average person.
Yeah, maybe normal, average, that might not be honestly the right way to express it.
I mean,
I think you know what I'm trying to say.
No, I think that all the perspective characters are all chosen for a very explicit reason.
Yeah.
All of them are very, like, Allie, who becomes,
oh my God,
becomes Eve, is an orphan, a runaway, probably mentally ill.
That's another thing I want to let you finish, but okay. Gosh, that's another thing I want to dive into.
Yeah. So she obviously, you think about, like, think about a teenage girl runaway, you know, struggling to survive, victim mm-hmm. of a victim of abuse. You know, no, she has the least amount of power in society. You know, like a person like that has the least access to power and control of her life. Roxy is the daughter of an English mob boss, mm-hmm. and so that's an interesting power dynamic, because the mob boss himself is relatively powerful. He has a sway with his name. They are constantly, I guess, in gang wars, but he still has power. But because she is the daughter, because she is also like, it's not always made clear exactly, like, his family is made up of children from different women, and
that's what it seemed like.
And she is one that is not held up in favor until she gets the power, until she has this power and is the most powerful person apparently on the planet with it. At that point, it swings back to her, and that is, I think, meant to be kind of analogous to, like, you see a lot of, in this book, a lot of debate about old power structure versus new power structure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, old crime power is, you know, it's old. You know, it's laid up in, like, industry. Like, it's, I mean, especially, I think, you know, we relate to it through the mafia and stuff like that. But it is an old institution of power that is passed down through blood. You know, it is the family aspect, which is like when you see that, you see like, okay, so Allie has no family. She builds her own. Roxy has a family. It's all, and that's where she gets her power from. Margot and Jocelyn, you know, Margot is a politician and her own daughters, you know, tie into that Tunde, but Tunde is a man in the only male perspective in the book. And I think that is like, he's a journalist. So obviously access to information is powerful, but also he's a dude. And prior to the power, that is access to, you know, more privilege, more power than an average woman. And I think that's like all the those four perspectives, which are make up the four main characters of the book. They are that it is just meant to present to us kind of an array of power dynamics and show us how this new status quo would disrupt them or embolden them. Or change how things work. Because Allie is literally nothing until she gets the power. And then suddenly she's Mother Eve. She is important. But I think that's...
No, I think that's a really good point. Because, like, you can tell everything with this book was planned with a lot of intention. But I hadn't really sat and thought about every single viewpoint and how they showcase how the power is going to affect them. Okay, so with Allie, what do you think about the voice? First she referred to it as her mother, then it was God, and then eventually I feel like it just became the voice. And at first I thought it was like an inner monologue, and then I thought maybe there was something there, like maybe there was something to the power where it was speaking to her. And I think I'm left feeling conflicted on if it was meant to be mental illness or if it was really some sort of, I think throughout the book, like people are talking about how the power spoke to them. And when Roxy's brother eventually kind of steals hers away from her and tries to use it, it's like, and then the power said, like, it's giving him like commentary. What do you think about that? Do you think that was...
I don't... Okay, so I think largely it is not supposed to be an actual alive, like, sentient thing talking to people. Mm-hmm. In Allie's case, I do think that is just meant to lead us to believe that she is mentally ill in some way.
Yeah, that's what I ended up leaning towards, too.
I mean, it's not like... I think most people have a inner monologue. You know, we talk to ourselves, we think, and it is, there's a reason in like fiction throughout time, they have the figures of, you know, your inner demons and inner angels, you know, arguing about what a person should do, because we all have that. We have conscience, we have our own ethics where we go, is this the right thing? I don't, you know, we debate. So arguments about inner monologue are fine, but I think in Allie's case, it is, we are supposed to believe, especially with revelations like later on, that she is mentally ill to some degree, and I think it is worsened by the abuse she went through as a child. But I think largely I read it as the voice speaking to people. I forget. Oh, there's a very specific part sequence that I cannot remember where it was, but it basically reminded me of a thing people say about guns and is often brought up in arguments about gun control. And I think obviously the comparisons are easy in here, because, you know, if you have the power to actually get someone to death inside of you, that's like, you're carrying it. I think someone in the book says it's like they're carrying a loaded gun.
It was the mayor right before she had the test to see if she had the power, like lying dormant inside of her. And someone said, oh, well, you wouldn't let someone walk around the office with a loaded gun. And that's exactly what this power is. So it was basically saying that you couldn't have an important job if you had this power, right? Because you have a weapon on you at all times.
Yeah. And it is, I think, an argument of gun controls brought up is the fact that, yeah, guns are just a thing. You know, guns don't think, guns don't act. You act, a person acts. You know, you, mm-hmm. but if you give a person a gun, they want to use it. It, and it's not in, inherent in them to say, oh, yeah, I have a gun now, so I need to shoot someone with it. It is a thing inherent to people. It is a thing mm-hmm. inherent to you present someone with something, an extraordinary ability, something that gives them power, that makes them feel powerful. If you carry a gun, it makes you feel powerful because it is a powerful object. And if you have a power like this, I feel like all that voices and stuff is just, for the most part, aside from Allie, I think is a representation of that, a representation of if you have suddenly access to this new power that you never had before, you need to express it, need to show it, because it, that's like the, you know, the power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely, like all that kind of, you know, idioms that got bounced around for years and are kind of cliche at this point, are still, I think, relevant. And I think this, that is what this book is trying to demonstrate, especially with that, with the fact that all these people with this, suddenly with this power, are suddenly like, oh, it's speaking to me. It makes me, it's making me want to do these things. And I think ultimately is what is just kind of reinforcing what the book is kind of saying, is that it's not necessarily, I think it raises a question at a certain point about were men always put in positions of power because men were powerful, or because they valued power in, you know, it is at the end, like, talking about the institutions of power and why men have held them in all recorded history. Is it because they're more powerful, or because they are all about, they, men inherently appreciate power more than women, or whatever. I think that's actually one of the things the book kind of falters on. But I think that voice is just representing that, is that they have this power, and because they have it, they want to use it. And it is calling to them to use it, because it is powerful, because it makes you feel powerful, and so you want to use it. It's like, I think ultimately, like, I don't know, the book, I think that's one of my problems with it,
mm-hmm.
is it ultimately turns kind of into a Twilight Zone episode.
Yes. I want to hear your point before I jump in,
like,
too.
But or a Star Trek episode, honestly. Like, there are, I think it's a Next Generation episode, I can't be sure, where, like, you know, and Star Trek had tons of these episodes where, you know, they go to a planet and they end up on the planet for whatever reason, they're stranded. You know, our warp drive broke down. Oh, we can't, our teleporter doesn't, whatever, it doesn't matter. they're trapped there. And it's, you know, and there is a specific episode where it's Picard and some other, and like a handful of other people are trapped on this island where, or planet, where women are in control. And it turns out, like, and it just is.
Oh, I know the episode you're talking about.
I think it's relatively well known, I would say, but it, and you're like, oh, well, it turns out, like, the overall message of this, the episode, is just like, oh, well, when you put women in power, they turn just as bad as men, you know, mm-hmm. you, and it's power is the problem. It's not gender. And sure, like, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but it is not, that's not an interesting examination to me. You know, that is not interesting when you go, oh, yeah, power is bad. It makes people, turns them into bad people. And I go, okay, I agree. But that doesn't say anything about our culture. That, like, and that's the most fascinating stuff in this book is about, I think, to me, is the stuff that is reflections on our culture, about rape culture, about gender dynamics. Like, that's the stuff that I really, really like. And it's the stuff that I would say earns the dangerous part. It's like, it feels like, yeah, say all that stuff, it's really nice, I like to hear it. But when you just turn it into, oh, now women are in power and they're bad now, And I go, okay.
I do feel like that's how it ended too. Like, where it ended, like, well, the power corrupted the women as well, and they want to keep that power. So, apocalypse. Cool.
Yeah.
What the email correspondence at the end was kind of what when you said Twilight Zone, that's mm-hmm. almost what it. That's immediately where I went to, because that felt like, you know, the movie stopped playing and you have like the kind of like weird stepping out from the story into mm-hmm. like the narrator who was there all along discussing the book, and you're like, what? Like,
yeah.
And I mean, that was I didn't expect it to end with that sort of line of like, have you thought about publishing this under a female name to be taken seriously? Because you're just going to be pinned down in men's fiction, and that's a limited genre. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wonder, and I almost bet that there were real conversations about like, maybe you should publish under a more gender neutral name, like if you want the power to have the most impact, it felt like a real conversation that just had the pronouns shifted. And a lot of, I think, you know, that was the point, but I didn't expect the ending. I thought it was building, and maybe it's just the sort of stories I read, but I really thought that I was going to leave this book with some sort of, and the messages like tied together a little bit. Mm-hmm. I really didn't expect it to be like, and then basically the world is destroyed and we rebuild and the women are in power. Like, oh,
yeah, it's the thing I hate the most. I don't know if I want to use the word hate. I really, I know. I just really dislike the frame, the weird, like, because the thing is, it is at the very beginning. It has, you just don't know what the hell it is at the very beginning mm-hmm. because you haven't read the book yet. And so you're like, there's like right before the book starts, really, you get like a couple pages of email correspondence about a dude and a woman, and it's just in one email back and forth, and then it goes, The Power, a historical novel by this dude's name, Neil Adam Armin. And then it jumps into the book, and when you start the book, you don't know what the hell is this, why are there emails, and by this, that's not who this book is by, and you're like all right, whatever, you put it in the back of your mind. You're like, whatever, okay. And then you start the book, and the book is, I'm reading through the book, and it is dynamite. Like, it is one of the book. I read this in a single sitting. I read it all in one go, because I was really, I felt compelled. I felt pulled through the book, and like some of it is even, it's simple things like the way that the book is laid out. Like, it says 10 years to go. Like, that's the,
and you're like, what?
10 years to go to what? And you're like, 10 years to what? And that's the thing. I'm like, oh, what? Like, it is the very first like chapter heading is like a question and a mystery. And you're like, 10 years to go to what thing? And then you're reading through the book, and like, I like all the characters, even though they're not likable. You know, I find them interesting. I'm compelling.
They were all interesting. Yes, definitely. Like, I found them frustrating, but like, yeah, like when it would get back to Allie's chapters, I'm like, ooh, what crazy nonsense like is going on here, you know? So for sure.
And so I'm compelled to, like, I'm being pulled through this book. And then by this point, the kind of that email correspondence, so it's two emails, really, one back at the very beginning of the book, are kind of half forgotten. I'm like, I know it's there, and I'm like, what was that? Why was that in this book? But I'm just like, moving. The stuff that's happening is interesting. We're seeing the birth of this new power and the immediate ramifications from it. And then as soon as things start kind of like getting a little kind of tedious. There's a time jump. Like, I think this book is paced really well for the most part. It really knows when to, okay, jump ahead. Let's move ahead a year. What has happened? Move ahead 6 months. What has changed? But in between all these chapters, you get these illustrations, which are, some are illustrations of, they're like historical artifacts. They're like, here's fossil evidence of things. And you're like, what is going on? And it's like the first one is three images of the Holy Mother, approximately 500 years old, found in a dig in the South Sudan. And I'm like, 500 years old? What's? And I'm like, okay. And then 9 years to go, 9 years, and then 8 years, seven, five, four, it jumps in bits and starts. But at a certain point, I go, oh, this is all happening in the past, the far distant past. And then when you get near the very, very end, you get to the point where you're like, oh, the world's going to end. That's what's happening. They have there's an apocalypse, and then they're finding all the fossil evidence of our world. And then that email correspondence is in the far future, where a dude has written the history of this, of things. Like, he's written an historical novel, historical fiction, about the distant past, when this happened for the first time. And it immediately took all the wind out of my sails. Every time, because these characters aren't likable, but I am invested in them. I care about what's happening to them. When Roxy loses her power, I am depressed. I'm sad.
That was gross.
It's really bad. That is the worst thing in this book to me. Like, I could, it was brutal, because it was literally like ripping a part of someone out of them. And it's just so terrible, along with all the other terrible things. But it really, and all this stuff happens at the end. And like, I could deal with it. But in the end, it just, oh, the world ends. And I'm like, but none of the characters really choose that. It just happens. It just, they kind of all end up failing, all of them in their own way, to a certain extent. I assume they all get exploded. So there's that. And I don't see the need for the email stuff at all. I think it detracts from the novel. I think it is my biggest problem with it. Like, I think most of my other complaints are relatively nitpicky and are about choices. And I feel like this is a thing that ultimately, like, why is it here? Why does it add? Like, does it add, make this thing more, does it make it better by being there? And I think no, it doesn't. I think it makes it worse. I think it feels unconfident. It feels very much like people aren't going to understand what's going on. Let's add this email stuff to explain it and try and be a little meta about it. And it feels show-offy in a bad way. It feels a little indulgent. It feels it feels unnecessary. Like, I understood, you don't need to rub it in my face. Like, you can just present it as, okay, this is, you can still have it as a historical novel. It is delving back in time. All those things are happening, I think. But to have it there and then to just be like, oh yeah, maybe, like, to demonstrate the new normal in the future, it feels very much like we want to show in the end, oh, it's not, this is all, like, you mentioned, Paige, about it feels a couple times like, oh, we want to make sure that you feel like this is important, and this is talking about our culture. And that's ultimately what that email, the email stuff at the end, in the very beginning, feels like. It feels very much like, hey, hey, wink, wink, nod, nod, make sure you know. Yes. And I'm like, I got it, guys. It's not.
Yeah, and that's how I felt about it too. And like, it's so unsubtle. I think that was a point that you made too, where it's just like, I feel like it ends it feeling like a little heavy handed, you know? And there were a couple other moments too, where I just felt like they were really like a little, if I'm just being like really nitpicky, like, lines that stuck out, but also lines that I felt like we were getting like five of in each chapter. Like, there was a moment, and this was actually one that I I didn't necessarily have a problem with these, but every time I read them, it kind of took me out of the moment because I was like, I get that that's what's happening right now. Like, you don't really need to tell me. But we have a scene where Roxy is hiding and she mentions that she hiding makes her feel weak. Like she's hiding like a man would hide. And the whole scene in like the beautiful prose, because this book is written really like poetically, I got that from the scene, and just having that one little word in there just made me like take a step back and go, I understand. Like, I get it. And so there were a lot of little moments in there like that for me where I was just like, we know. Like, we're, if you're reading this book, I'm assuming that you're like paying attention and you're getting a lot of the commentary that's being made. You don't necessarily need it spelled out. And so the moments where it was very like just in your face, it kind of made me take a step back. And sometimes there were some where I'm just like, I'm taking a break. This was okay.
Yeah. And I think that's all like those. I think I can forgive a lot of the prose that does it. I can forgive it. I can go, okay, yeah, it feels like writing, but I'll let it pass. I'll let it slide. In for certain characters in particular, because I feel like they're kind of, you know, Roxy is a very wordy character. She is.
Yeah,
very,
that is true.
She's very blunt. She is very, you know, she is, you know,
I think she's my favorite.
Yeah, Roxy's. I like Roxy a lot because largely she is like that. You ever seen Goodfellas, Paige?
No.
You should see Goodfellas. Goodfellas is great. It's a good movie. But Henry Hill, who's the main character of Goodfellas, Roxy feels like that. She feels like an underdog crime character that is like definably a bad person. Like, she kills people for crime reasons to make money. But you still cheer for her. You still root for her because she's like, at some base level, she's likable and charismatic and compelling. And you're like, oh, yeah. And I think that largely all the characters are, to a certain degree, like compelling. Like, I definitely want to keep, I never got tired of them. I didn't get bored by them. I wanted to see what they were going to be doing next, even if I knew it was a bad thing. And especially in the case of Allie or Margot, it seemed Margot was just like immediately like, let's just start death camps for the girls. Good. We'll train them to be murderers. Excellent.
Good choices.
Yeah, great choices. But it always comes back to me when it's like very clearly a structural thing. Like, the finer points of what to include in prose and not is a tenuous science at best.
Right.
So when, you know, an extra line is included here or there that is a little too unsubtle, I go, that's a little too unsubtle, but I understand. You know, not everyone gets everything.
True.
People are surprisingly dense when you are sometimes when you're writing and you're trying to get things across, and they're like, I've had it encountered in my own writing where I'm like, you didn't get this? I spelled it out 5 times prior to this. And you just went, nope, I didn't see any of those times. I'm like, okay. All right. So I understand that. But it's when you get to like very simple structural things like addending weird email chains onto things, it's when I go, I don't think, and it's that mention, those mentions at the end, the ones you talked about, like when you go, oh, maybe he should use a female name to publish this, a female pen name, and I got it, you don't have to. I understand, it's a, yeah, I know that I understand, like, if you want to write a book about the publishing industry and how, like, it's weird, like, how it works and how it's strange, and how gender dynamics work in the publishing industry.
Yeah.
I'm for that. Like, that sounds like a cool book. I'd read it. But this is not what this book is. This book is about, you give women powers and they go crazy with it, apparently. So maybe stay on task. Not, I don't need jokes at the end about, oh, you should use a... isn't it funny? You should use it.
It didn't feel like a punchline. It felt like it ended this crazy story with just like a
Yeah, isn't it? don't worry. It's everything boy, turned out all right. It's all right at the end.
Do you think we were extra annoyed with that because we're writers, like, and we're just like,
I'm sure some of it is, but I mean, I think ultimately a lot of people, even though they may not write, they are story crafters. You know, people who are not, let's say, quote, creative people, they don't make anything, they are strict consumers, they will still go, why did that person do that? Why is this here? Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And I think ultimately that is what that is. And I don't know who this is. Like, I think I'm pretty in the wheelhouse for this thing. I feel like I am a pretty, like, a typical person who this is for. Maybe not a number one, but certainly in somewhere in that Venn diagram, I'm in it. And it stood out to me as something that just, I don't know. I want, the more and more I go, the more I write and the more I read, the older I get. Maybe it's just that. Maybe I'm just getting old. But I want things to be the shortest version they could be. The most concise version, not necessarily, I guess, I say calling shortest is, I think, unfair, but the most concise version. Like, if it doesn't need to be there, it shouldn't be there. Cut it, get it out. And like that email stuff, like, what does it add? I don't know. It just feels indulgent.
It did give us a picture of, like, now the world is the same, but the gender equality battle is swapped. Like, and you're like, I assumed that was what's going to happen, but
I wish that we saw that. I wish that we could see.
But how can you flash to the future when it was like the story takes?
I mean, place? I guess you could just have it not have the apocalypse happen.
True, but you know, it almost. So I always kind of like, I can't help but laugh whenever a story actually ends with like, and then everybody died, the end. Because I feel like people will joke about it. Like, I don't know what to do with my manuscript. Maybe I'll just make the whole world burn. And like, I'm definitely not saying it was a lazy ending. Like, it made sense, but it always just kind of makes me chuckle a little bit. What did you think about Roxy and Tundi at the end? I was kind of annoyed, it felt a little shoehorned in, it felt really forced to me like pairing them together, it just didn't feel super like a natural thing.
I don't mind them like teaming up, that's fine.
Teaming up was fine. I meant as like romantic partners. I didn't see it.
I mean, I could, the only, it feels like at that point they're both like, oh, we're probably gonna die soon.
Yeah,
let's just do it before we die to have some, you know, have some fun before the end of the world. So that at least I can buy. You know, they, and both of them are a little, I'm trying to think of the right word. They are.
They've done some stuff. They've seen some stuff.
Yeah, I guess
they both have like past.
Yeah, they're tired, you know, and they're probably just like, I just want to, you know, kiss somebody. It probably make me feel a little bit better. But I don't. You could easily, again, it doesn't need it to be there. I don't think it adds anything to the story. Honestly,
yeah.
Like, I think the only interesting parts like about Tunde, like I found Tunde's sexuality and like that stuff interesting because it was the only male perspective in the book, and he was like, it was often like, oh, suddenly he is now powerless, he is like at the mercy of whatever woman he is, you know, trying to seduce. But also they talk about a lot about they like this book kind of female gazes him a little bit, like it makes him kind of a sexual object at times because he's in shape.
It really does.
And I think, I mean, it's on purpose. It is supposed to, it is flipping the script, you know, like there's so, it's the joke about fantasy writers and describing a woman's boobs for a paragraph, and you're just like, I get it, guys. She has boobs. Good job. But
you don't want to read 5 paragraphs about her ample bosom?
Yeah, she boobily walked down the stairs.
I love that one. That one's my favorite meme about...
It's very good. It's very well written in how bad it is. But I like that. I appreciate it because it does because you know, if you're going to be flipping the power dynamics, you might as well just go all the way. And it talks about, yeah, Tunde is suddenly becoming like Margo in particular. She's just like, oh yeah, he's a sexy dude, but she's like, and like she's responsible, so she just goes after some assistant instead of going after the reporter.
I didn't realize he was supposed to be hot until that chapter. I don't know if I glossed over his description, but I just thought he was like an average guy that for some reason, I don't know. I'm not sure, but then they described him like doing reports in like Speedos on the beach. And I went, what? He seemed like more of like a serious, like action-y. We read about him in like a giant crowd that becomes like a mob and all of this stuff. He seems like he starts off kind of just like as kind of a schmuck, like, and he's filming little things here and there. And then he gets into like crazy action, ridiculous stuff. And then I pictured him as like this running around filming stuff. But really like, getting like gritty real footage, and then it was like him reporting from the beach in his Speedo, and I was like, who? I had to flip back and make sure we were still talking about the same guy, because it's just it surprised me.
I always passed it as he was a reasonably attractive dude, and but Margot was just a horny lady, so she was like, oh yeah, Tunde, he's an attractive man and I'm horny, so whatever. I kind of pictured him as, you watch The Good Place?
Yeah.
Picture him as Chidi from The Good Place. Okay. That's my mental image of him.
I think I would have found him more likable if I would have pictured him as Chidi. I would have been like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's, I mean, not really as character, but just the appearance of, like, as a handsome dude. I don't know why they have sex at the end, but it's fine. It's not like I'm not like angry about it. It just, by the end, I was, as soon as like, it's the last, like, I don't know, like very like 10th of the book. It's not a lot, but I was kind of checked out anyway, because I'm like, oh, the world's ending. Let's just get to it. Come on. I don't like, it's not that that's a bad choice.
It just felt weird. It felt weird to me.
It's just not the thing that interests me. Like, I'm interested in a world, like, it is, like, killing a character is not always the most interesting thing you can do to them. You, like, challenging them is interesting. By giving them, presenting them with difficult choices is interesting. But the most interesting choice at the end is with Allie, when she finds out about her mother and all that stuff. Yeah. And like, that's interesting. But ultimately, nothing she does matters at the end, because it just, everything blows up. And I don't know if that is the intent, is like, oh, you feel frustrated and cheated because, oh, all these characters I liked are all dead, and this whole society couldn't have survived for this long. Like, we are in it is inevitable that it leads to destruction. And I'm like, the question raised in my mind is like, is this plausible, this, that it would lead to a war, a nuclear war? I'm like, yeah, it's plausible that there could be a nuclear war from this happening. But there's also many other things that are plausible that keep the characters alive and makes me interested in their journeys, and having like, make, putting them in an endpoint that shows them as a changed character, versus like, how is, like, I feel like there is still, maybe I just felt, because I feel that unrealized potential with these characters, I feel like there's still room for growth there. And maybe it's just like that aborted ending is purposeful. It's supposed to make me feel that way.
Maybe, because it's like, none of their stories quite felt finished, but that could have been a commentary on like unfulfilled life and potential, you know. Could I mean anything.
I know. I don't want to I don't want to give this book like gold stars for effort or anything, because I think largely, like, I don't know, I think mostly the characters do come to a, like, Roxy most come to an arc, I think, and largely with this book, it's not just the character's not the only important thing, like the world itself is a character to a certain extent.
Yeah, maybe that was the point, you know, like, no matter what's happening with these individual characters, like, the world is going to keep turning and things are going to happen. Like, this wasn't a story of this crazy world where all these girls get powers and one stands up. Like, it wasn't a Hunger Games. It wasn't a Divergent. Like, none of these characters, if the world was going to end, I don't feel like could have truly stopped it. Allie did have a lot of power. It kind of felt like Allie was the one inciting the end of the world. But like, if that's what was, I don't know, like it wasn't a, and then the one girl stands up and saves the day kind of book. They all band together and everything is okay. And they create a new order. Like,
I was not expecting a happy ending, but I was, yeah. I just wanted more than bombs drop, everyone dies.
No, I did too. Like, it did leave me feeling unfulfilled with the book for sure.
But I don't want that to come as too strong a criticism. It is my only criticism is that there's email stuff in the ending. I think largely that the book is really good and really well written, and raises a lot of interesting questions. And I like it, it's just that little thing that makes me from giving it like a perfect score. It's very much like, if this stuff was a little different and made me feel, I don't know, more complete about the story or whatever, I would say this is great. I wholeheartedly recommend it to anyone. Honestly, I think my only other caveat would be like, if you are sensitive to sexual violence in particular, mm-hmm. probably not for you. Because it's just, I mean, that is kind of a feel thing. Like, some people can do it and some people can't, and it sometimes is a mood thing. Like, sometimes I'm like, I'm fine today, I can read this today, and other days you're like, I want kittens, I don't want this anymore. But I still think that the prose is very good at for the most part. I think there are those little hiccups here and there, but I highlighted a couple things that I thought were really good. First is Margot, when this is as she's first learning she has the ability after Jocelyn awakes it in her. She's at work with her boss, who's, I guess, the governor. Daniel's the governor, right? And she's a mayor of like a big city.
I think so. But then there was a moment where they said, she was like, well, he's not my boss. So it felt like they were like on equal footing.
I think it changes as the book goes on.
Anyway. Oh, okay. So I might have just, yeah.
This is before she even reveals she has the power. So Daniel drums his fingers on the desk and she thinks, as she finds herself thinking quite often, I could kill you for that. It's become a constant low-level hum in her. A thought she comes back to like a smooth stone in her pocket to rub her thumb across. There it is. Death.
Yeah, I really liked that line too.
And it's very much, it's coming back to that point you made with the voice telling them to use this power, to exercise, to kill, to use it, to, you know, it's very much like, because it is there, the temptation is there, always. It is always like, oh, the thing that I could not do anything about prior to this thing that has always bothered me, I could never, you are my boss, you have more power than me, I could never, never stop you, now I can. Mm-hmm. And that, it, like, it's not, like, reasonable, it's not like logical thing, like, yeah, I'm gonna kill you for tapping on the desk, but it's there because she can do it, she has the ability. The other thing that really stood out to me when I was reading it's in that same scene where Roxy and Tunde are hiding from the guess militia, whatever they are, of the as they're killing everyone in that camp. It's really rough. No doubt there. It is like, and as they're trying to escape, and so they see a barrel in the distance, and if they can, then if there's people like right on them, and if they can make noise, they can distract the people on them, and they can run away. And so they do that. They manage to hit this empty barrel, or what they thought was an empty barrel, and it makes noise. And they do it a couple times, and then everyone who's all the few women that are surrounding the tree that they're hiding in run away, go after this barrel. And they go back, they go over to the barrel, and it turns out there are two children hiding inside the barrel. Roxy thought it was just an empty barrel. So they're about to get away. If Roxy had her power, she would return and turn every one of those women all to ash. As it is, Tunde grabs her hand and pulls her away, and they run on. Those children would never have survived. They might. They would have died there, anyway, of cold and exposure. They might have lived. And it's like that constant, like that. I really enjoy that small little bit, because it, I think, really well reflects how we rationalize our decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Of, oh, well, I didn't know they were there. They would have died anyway. Maybe they didn't die. Maybe they survived. Maybe they didn't kill the kids. And it's just very much like, I did something wrong and I don't know what to do about it. So I have to rationalize it some way. And it's very much like, and then that kind of, and I think that's another thing that endears us to Roxy a little bit, and that she does have misgivings about sometimes when she does bad things.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially to non-crime people. Like when it's, you know, people in a little bit of, when it's people in crime gangs and all that stuff, it's very much like, oh, they're in this business, they know what they're in for, you know, it's part of the deal. But whenever she's dealing with civilians, you might say, mm-hmm. she seems to have a little bit more sympathy for them. I don't know. I like that a lot, and there it's representative of like the prose, and this is generally pretty strong. And I think it's strong to me because it's not showy in most ways. It is it's fairly simple diction, fairly simple prose that is layered on top of each other to create the emotions it's looking for. And I like that a lot. It's the kind of writing I like the most, because, you know, flowery language doesn't always do it for me.
No, you're right, because it managed to be very poetic and very seamless overall, but also it was simple. Like, there weren't, it didn't have that, like, if just for comparison purposes, but it didn't have that, like, flowery, flowing elegance of, like, a Neil Gaiman novel. It was much more, I don't want to say straightforward, but, like, I guess just in a totally different style.
Simple in a good way.
Yeah, simple in a good way. Simple, simple and very poetic.
And I think, I don't know, I use the word simple, and I think a lot of people think of the word simple as bad or dumb or something, but simple does not mean easy. You know, simple can mean, things can be simple and complex at the same time. Simple just means information presented clearly and plainly, but also demonstrating, I don't know, a different depth than, you know, purple prose people often use, you know, to talk about, like, oh, it uses a lot of words unnecessarily. And I think that's the other thing. I think this book largely does avoid that. I think the only question is presenting the how much information it presents, which is, I think, a different question versus the quality of the prose. And I think that is a thing that we both criticized a little bit. I don't know. It's very good, and I understand the hype. It's not one of those books where I go, oh, I don't understand why people like this. I understand it very well. I just have a few misgivings here and there, but I would still recommend it. Obviously, I think people like Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, definitely. I think if this is the sort of book that you enjoy, you know what I mean, that you gravitate towards, then you're probably, it's going to make you think. It's going to probably be the book in a lot of ways that you want it to be. But if you're not looking for anything serious, if you're not looking for like a lot of commentary on social stuff and like power and everything that we've talked about, like skip it. There's lots of books. Pick a different book out. I think overall, it wasn't for me. Not the sort of person that really like gravitates towards the serious like issue political kind of books. That being said, I am glad that I read it. I'm glad I got from beginning to end, and there were moments that I really liked from this book. It kept me turning the page. I didn't want to, I know earlier I was like, I don't know that I would have finished it, but I think I probably would. I think I probably would have gotten at least until I realized that the world was going to end. And then I might have been like, oh, okay, I know it's going to happen. But yeah, overall, I think I wouldn't read it again. I probably wouldn't have picked it out, but I'm glad that I read it.
I don't know if I'd read it again, too. That's more of a question of just, I am at the point where there's so many things to read. I don't, of course, I say that, and I'm rereading Lord of the Rings for podcasts and rereading Dark Tower for series for podcasts. So I'm a liar. I will reread things. If I think I will reread Comfort Food. This is not comfort food.
No.
This is the opposite. This is getting thrown into a freezing cold bath. But sometimes that's good. If I think you know, right? Like, hey, if you're listening and you haven't read this book yet, you know already if it's for you. I understand perfectly not wanting to read or experience art that is toxic, or even discussing toxic things, which this book definitely does, and especially the sexual assault stuff. It's very heavy. Heavy. It's hard to read at times. But it's good. I won't mince words there. I think it's good. We don't know what we're reading next time yet. It's going to be probably a silly Christmas thing, a total disparate tonal shift from this. It might also be a bad book, but it'll be fine.
I feel like a bad, dumb book that we can like enjoy, but also maybe poke a little. We're both gonna love it. I'm gonna try to find the dumbest book ever, and we're both gonna be like, this was my new favorite thing. What a delight.
Hi, it's terrible, read it. That's what
Yeah, sometimes bad books are good books, so
they'll teach, every book teaches you something. Yeah. But well, I'll tweet out when we figure out what we're reading. I'll tweet it out if you guys want to read the thing with us, whatever it is. That will be roughly in a month's time that will be out. I need to get my schedule set up again, but holidays make everything very difficult. Paige, where can people find you and your books and everything you do on the internet?
Oh man, they're all on Amazon. Yeah. You can also, I think you can request a book into your local library. I know you can do that with Confidence, The Diary of an Invisible Girl. I think you can also do that with A Girl Called Monster. So if you're like, I want to go read this at the library, hey, ask your local librarian. They might be able to hook you up. Yeah, other than that, I mean, most of my stuff online is just under my name. And I sometimes tweet adorable dog photos. So come say hello.
I'll have links to all of Paige's stuff in the show notes. So you can go there and click on things if you don't want to. You know, type in names. It's very hard to do that on the internet. I say that, but it really is, sometimes is very much like...
Sometimes it is. No, it's true.
Sometimes is hard to do that. But I'll do it for us today. Paige, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Paige for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Norman, and the show's website is serofanasist.com. You can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/serofanasist. If you like the show, give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, tell your friends. Word of mouth helps, and I appreciate everyone who takes the time. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.